Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Monday, the 5th of May, before his passing, Pope Francis requests his Popemobile to be turned into a health clinic for the children of Gaza. The cardinals meet in Rome for their 10th General Congregation ahead of the conclave. But first, people in Gaza continue to suffer as Israel's blockade limits critical humanitarian aid to those in need. In the Vatican, I'm Kelsey Gussie. A four-month-old child is the latest Palestinian to starve to death in Gaza as Israel's blockade of critical humanitarian aid to the besieged enclave stretches into its third month amid relentless bombardments. Meanwhile, Israel's Security Cabinet said on Monday it has approved a plan to expand its military offensive against Hamas, which includes the capture of Gaza and the holding of its territory. Linda Bordoni reports.
The Israeli Security Cabinet's plan includes, among other things, the capture of the Strip, the moving of the Gazan population south, and denying Hamas the ability to distribute humanitarian supplies, as well as powerful attacks against the terrorists. Over 2 months have gone by since the 2nd of March, when the Israeli armed forces closed all entry points for humanitarian aid into the Strip. Two whole months in which no food, no drinking water, no medicine or any other essential supply has entered the territory. Speaking to Vatican Media, a Palestinian journalist who has escaped from Gaza and is now safely in Italy with his family, told of the desperate phone calls he receives from his father, who pleads with him, find a way to send in a kilo of flour. According to international humanitarian law, the use of food and water as weapons of war is unacceptable. Starving a population to force it to flee cannot be justified. But the use of Israeli drones last week that targeted a humanitarian flotilla in international waters that was attempting to deliver aid to the Gaza Strip seems to indicate a deliberate and conscious intent. Meanwhile, some 2.4 million Gazans are starving and in despair. It is not only hunger that is driving them to despair, but also the deafening silence, the absence of condemnation or protest from a world that hypocritically calls itself civilized. I'm Linda Bordoni.
In a final gesture before his death, announced in recent days and taking everyone by surprise, Pope Francis requested that his Popemobile be turned into a health clinic for the children of Gaza. As Francesca Merlo reports, the gesture is actually not too surprising, given his closeness throughout the years to the people of Palestine.
Pope Francis's legacy of peace continues to shine in our conflict-ridden world. The closeness he showed to the most vulnerable during his earthly mission is radiating even after his death, and his most recent surprise is no exception. His Popemobile, the very vehicle from which he waved and was close to millions of faithful all around the world, is being transformed into a mobile health unit for the children of Gaza. It was his final wish for the people to whom he had shown such solidarity throughout his pontificate, and especially in the last years. And in his final months, the Pope entrusted the initiative to Caritas Jerusalem, seeking to respond to the dire humanitarian crisis in Gaza, where nearly 1 million children have been displaced. Amid the horrific war, collapsed infrastructure, a mutilated healthcare system, and lack of education, children are the first to pay the price, with starvation, infections, and other preventable conditions putting their lives at risk. The repurposed Popemobile is being outfitted with equipment for diagnosis, examination, and treatment, including rapid tests for infections, diagnostic instruments, vaccines, and other life-saving supplies. It will be staffed by doctors and medics, reaching children in the most isolated corners of Gaza, once humanitarian access to the Strip is restored. Caritas Jerusalem, which has long served Gaza's communities under difficult conditions, is leading the on-the-ground effort. With over 100 staff members committed to healthcare delivery, the organization is now building on the Pope's legacy of compassion and strength, whilst bringing his final blessing to the people of Gaza. Anton Asfar, Secretary General of Caritas Jerusalem, said this vehicle represents the love, care and closeness shown by His Holiness for the most vulnerable, which he expressed throughout the crisis. But it's not just a vehicle, Brun added. It's the message that the world has not forgotten about the children in Gaza. But it is also an invitation that the rest of the world remember too. I'm Francesca Merlo.
And in his prayer intentions for 2025, Pope Francis had invited the faithful to pray for working conditions during the month of May. But with his passing on Easter Monday, the format for the Pope video with his prayer intention has now changed to offering reflections from Popes Francis, Benedict XVI, and John Paul II. In line with Pope Francis' wishes before passing away, the video invites us to pray that through work, each person might find fulfillment, families might be sustained in dignity, and that society might be humanized. Deborah Castellano, Luboff tells us more.
Before passing away on Easter Monday, the 21st of April, Pope Francis had expressed his wish that the Church pray during the month of May for working conditions. Due to his passing away, the format for the video accompanying this prayer intention has changed and offers the faithful words on this theme from the last three popes, late Pope Francis, Benedict XVI, and Pope St. John Paul II. Accompanying the Pope's words are images that combine different lived experiences revolving around the world of work. The Pope video for May invites us to pray that through work, each person might find fulfillment, families might be sustained in dignity, and society might be humanized. Moreover, in this moment of history, the Pope's Worldwide Prayer Network says it entrusts the mission of the next Pope to the Lord and continues its apostolic work, praying for the challenges of humanity and the Church's mission. The video recalls Pope Francis's words during a 2022 general audience, remembering when the evangelists Matthew and Mark refer to Joseph as a carpenter. Jesus, he noted, practiced his father's trade, which was a pretty hard job. From an economic point of view, he continued, it did not ensure great earnings. This biographical fact about Joseph and Jesus, he noted, made him think of all the workers in the world. Work, Pope Francis had added, anoints our dignity. And what gives you dignity, he said, is not bringing bread home. What gives you dignity is earning your bread. Next, the video turns to late Pope Benedict XVI, remembering when he addressed all workers on the Feast of St. Joseph in 2006, and stressed that work is of fundamental importance to the fulfillment of the human being and to the development of society. The video turns to late Pope St. John Paul II and his remarks when celebrating the Jubilee of Workers in the Jubilee Year of 2000. He said, "The Jubilee Year calls us for a rediscovery of the meaning and value of work, and that it is also an invitation to address the economic and social imbalances in the world of work by reestablishing the right hierarchy of values." I'm Deborah Castellano-Luboff.
And as the world mourns the passing of Pope Francis, leaders from across the Christian spectrum are remembering him not only as the Bishop of Rome, but as a tireless advocate for unity, dialogue, and justice. In an interview with Vatican Radio, Reverend Dr. Anne Bugard, General Secretary of the Lutheran World Federation and the first woman to hold that office, recalled the late Pope saying, "I always experienced him as very accessible, very attentive, and very open-minded." And his legacy, she said, will continue to remain with many, also in regard to the way he empowered women and how he really included them in his decision-making processes. And this morning in Rome, the College of Cardinals held their 10th General Congregation as they prepare for the upcoming conclave that starts on May 7th. And as Devin Watkins reports, the Cardinals are continuing their discussions on the state of the Church and their hopes for the future.
The director of the Holy See Press Office, Matteo Bruni, told reporters on Monday that 179 cardinals, including 132 cardinal electors, participated in the 10th General Congregation. He noted that all 133 cardinal electors are present in Rome ahead of the conclave that starts on May 7th. Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re, Dean of the College of Cardinals, updated the congregation on their sleeping arrangements for the conclave. Cardinal Camerlengo Kevin Farrell drew lots on Saturday afternoon for their room assignments. All will be accommodated at the Casa Santa Marta and the Old Santa Marta. The cardinal electors, said Mr. Bruni, will be able to travel from the Casa Santa Marta to the Sistine Chapel as they wish, even on foot, but noted they will follow a protected route. There were 26 interventions at the congregation on Monday morning on topics ranging from canon law, the Church's missionary nature, to the importance of Caritas in defending the poor. Some of the cardinals highlighted the presence of so many journalists in Rome. They said it is a sign that the gospel has meaning for the world today as a call to responsibility. Others recalled the Pope's Statio Orbis during the COVID-19 pandemic, calling it an open door of hope in a time of fear. They also spoke about the man they will elect, Pope, saying he needs to be a shepherd close to the people, a gateway to communion who gathers everyone in the blood of Christ in a world where the global order is in crisis. The cardinals also discussed the challenges of transmitting the faith, caring for creation, and denouncing war. Mr. Bruni said all efforts are being made during the general congregations to ensure that all cardinals who wish to speak have the opportunity to do so. Work has been completed in the Sistine Chapel as well as in the accommodations at the two Casa Santa Martas, and cardinals may check in as of Tuesday morning. Journalists said Mr. Bruni will not be able to visit the Sistine Chapel since the Vatican Gendarmerie have already secured it. However, he noted images will be released showing the prepared interior. I'm Devin Watkins.
The upcoming conclave to elect the 267th Pope will be the 76th in the form we know today, which goes back to the Middle Ages, and it is the 26th held under the gaze of Michelangelo's Last Judgment in the Sistine Chapel. To bring us from the Middle Ages to today, Lisa Zangarini tells us more.
The term conclave comes from two Latin words, cum, with, and clavis, key. In church terminology, it designates both the enclosed place where the papal election is held and the body of cardinals convened there to elect the new pope. This setting was formalized in 1274 by Pope Gregory X after the three-year-long voting process that led to his election in Viterbo, known to be the longest in history. That landmark reform followed other important changes introduced in the 11th century that began to shape the election of the Pope in the form we know today. Nicholas II first limited voting rights to cardinals in 1059, while Pope Alexander III established the two-thirds majority rule in 1179. Before then, papal elections occurred without a formal structure. For the first 10 centuries of church history, the successor of Peter was chosen with the involvement of the local ecclesial community. Clergy assessed candidates proposed by the faithful, and the bishops chose the pope. Interferences from the political powers of the time also played a major role in the election, often hindering the electoral procedures, as happened in the deadlocked election in Viterbo. In 1621, Gregory XV introduced the requirement for secret and written ballots. In 1904, Pius X abolished any claimed right of exclusion and enforced secrecy about all that happens in the conclave. Later, Pope Paul VI decreed that only cardinals under 80 years old could vote. Although every conclave has been held at the Sistine Chapel since 1878, over the centuries papal elections had taken place in various locations in Italy and even abroad before a fixed setting was decided upon. In his apostolic constitution, Universi Dominici Gregis, Pope John Paul II confirmed the most famous chapel in the world as the official location for the election of the new pope. The duration of conclaves varies. The longest recorded in history was that of Gregory X in 2071. On the opposite end of the conclave durations is the one in 1503, which lasted only a few hours, leading to the election of Pope Julius II. I am Lisa Zangarini.
That brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, please visit our website and our Facebook, X, and Instagram accounts. Many thanks today go to Alberto Giovanetti, Sister Mufaro, Alvina in studio. And, of course, a special thanks to all of you listening, and be sure to join us tomorrow morning at 8. In the Vatican, I'm Kelsey Gussie.